Chicken. Go ahead, Lonnie. Go in.
Hey. Hey, Lonnie. Get your ass away from there. I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding. Even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, good or evil, right or wrong. I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes. The devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. Field. I am Barry Sims, and you are listening to CTTC. With me is always the lovely Lacey Lou. What's up, beautiful?
Cut to the chase.
Yes, indeed, baby. And tonight, only tonight, on All Hallows Eve, we have a special guest joining us. He goes by M.M. Hold on, Haddonfield. It's not that M.M. No, not him, but we got the one, the only, Mike Merriman. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, what is up, Cut to the Chase? How are you doing?
Excellent, sir. How about yourself?
Hey, man, it's 90 degrees in October in California. That's about how I'm doing. Shit.
Is it really?
Yeah, it hasn't been a steady, like, the whole month, but this past week, I don't know what the hell is going on. It's like that last hurrah of the end of summer trying to hang on, but it's going away soon, so it's gonna get better.
Right on, man. Well, thank you for coming back to Cut to the Chase. It's been a while since you've been on.
Yeah, man, what's up with that? I've been missing it, man. I see all these, like, you know, these retrospectives, these franchises, these one-off shows, and I'm like, hey guys, I'm kind of nudging my elbow on the side like, hey, you remember me?
Well, I mean, and that's why you're so coveted.
Yes.
That we had to get you on for, you know, the most epic franchise of all time of the OG Halloween.
You brought me back to talk about the movie that's been talked about to death. I dare you to come up with something that no one's ever said about.
Dude, listen, man, listen. This whole watch, I was trying to find anything. Just anything that we could point out that hasn't been said before. I couldn't find a goddamn thing.
But you know what? You've never podcasted with Lacey Lou on this film before, so I guarantee you I did.
I'm pretty hopeful that you'll bring something new to the table. Absolutely.
I think I got a few, like, little off-kilter things that might make people laugh. Or
not to get ahead of ourselves, but the whole part where he, Myers stole the car and, like, drove to Haddonfield, my initial thought was like, man, I should bring up, like, on the show, like, how the hell did he know how to drive and get to Haddonfield? And then immediately I was like, actually, I've heard people say that on, like, every damn podcast.
Well, no, I think I do have a few. I think I do have a few things here that will provoke conversation. But before we get into the film, I since you are back, Mike, and we never did this before, but we do, you know, like to give our listeners kind of insight into the guests that we're bringing on.
Whoa.
So we do have questions.
All right.
And it's called Fast Five Finger Questions. No.
Like, is that what it's called? I was like, that's a cool name. I've never heard that before.
Like Fast Five Finger Questions. Like Finger Bang Bang.
Wow.
Like, you remember that episode of South Park where he's like Finger Bang Bang when they're supposed to be like the Backstreet Boys?
Oh, I remember. Oh, yeah. No, we got
every
it.
Time. Well, that's why I never really named it that, but that's what I think. Fast Five Finger.
All right, then, Mike, are you ready for the Fast Finger Banging Blast Away?
Finger Bang Bang.
I mean, after that description, I better be.
You're welcome.
All right, so we kind of try to keep it, like, related to somewhat of, you know, what we're doing.
Sexual innuendos.
Ooh. All right, so, Mike, question number one. Are you ready?
Well, that was easy, yes. It's a question.
Oh,
wow.
I see what you did there. Fuck
see, you.
You
got it.
All right, so, you know, it is Halloween time, it is fall, it's October 15th, So we would like to know, what is the most creative costume that you've ever gone as? It can be a kid or as an adult. What do you think is your most creative costume?
That's a good one.
Fast Five, Mike.
I was Dracula one year, and I had just about every accessory you would ever think of Dracula to have in any Dracula movie you've ever seen.
So you need, like, fangs and a cape?
Fangs, a cape, the medallion. I think I even wore, like, dress shoes when I was trick-or-treating. Like, it was one of those years I was just obsessed, and, like, because I had seen, at that point, different movies, I was
like,
well...
Were you a kid or an adult?
Probably, like, early teens.
There you go.
Yeah. So it was still kind of in that fun age range where go out trick-or-treat, race back to watch Treehouse of Horror, and then go back out.
Yes! Dude, I've been hitting them hard this year, Mike.
Wait, can't actually talk about it right now, because there's something else coming for that. But Treehouse of Horror... Bleh. Anyways.
Oh, Lacey. Just well, for that, I mean, you definitely gotta have me on one of those, because...
Yeah, and then the one that she did watch, she goes, ha, this is actually really funny. I'm like,
no,
what do you mean?
I watched like four of them last year, and I hated all of them.
They're very hit or miss, I'll give you that.
But the
ones
that
do hit are great.
Which was to, you know, it appealed to me because it was a based off of things that I enjoy.
I don't want to ask you, because I don't want you to give away anything that you'll be discussing later, but with those Treehouse of Horrors, it really comes down to, for me, is... You can see how much better the writing in the show was in a certain era of the show, where it's not just that they're doing horror stuff, but they're actually, like, spoofing actual horror stuff as opposed to just, like,
right,
trying to come up with any dumb thing based on a horror title. So,
yes.
Yeah, and that's all I'll say, because, like, I'm not trying to get you to divulge anything that's for a future show.
Oh, I mean, that was basically the extent of my Treehouse horror watching, so there's that. But we are going to watch the new one, so we'll see how that transpires.
Yes, indeed.
So, next question, Mike Merriman. What is your least favorite holiday Halloween-themed film? So, like, it doesn't have to be, like, you know, Halloween franchise. It could be any Halloween-themed film.
I mean, Halloween Resurrection would be the easiest answer.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll probably just say that because that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And
you're doubling down on it?
Doubling down. I mean, I have to really think hard to come up with, like, more obscure stuff because I'm sure it's there. But Halloween Resurrection just, it almost gives me a physical reaction of how bad
like
it is.
Like a regurgitation?
What about something like Trick? On what is it, Hulu?
Yeah, it is on Hulu.
There's so many bad ones. And honestly, I like their stuff. They actually wrote a Halloween movie at one point, and it was going to be Halloween 3D with Todd Tarner.
Do you think it would have been like kind of the same? It was supposed to be the same story, if I'm not mistaken.
There was
mistaken.
That one, and then there was the one that Marcus Dunstan and his partner that they were doing as well.
Yeah. So those are just fun little facts that we got running by our viewers tonight. So you are going with Halloween Resurrection. Final answer?
Final answer.
Okay.
Does that allow me to move on to the next question?
Well, no, actually, I kind of want you to go for one that isn't actually have, you know, our main protagonist that we're going to be talking about later. So you got to name another.
So Trick or Treat, motherfucker.
Thank you.
Oh, let's see. I don't know. I didn't think Trick was that good. So I'll say that.
Okay, no, you can't just steal Dan's answer. You can't just steal Dan's answer. Like, what is this?
Hey, Mike.
This wasn't fucking phone a friend.
Well, it's just, it's weird because I'm like trying to think in my head. I was like, I actually like most things right. that I've seen that take place on Halloween. So I'm trying to like, what one did I? What's the one from last year that a lot of people liked? Was it Haunt? That
Hellfest, Haunt?
I think it was it Haunt? Or, I don't know. Was Haunt
there
the one more?
Bloodfest, Haunt. Well, no, I think that was the year prior, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it was Haunt last year was the main newer Halloween film. That and Trick.
Haunt was one that, like, a lot of people loved, and I just was like, I like, of all things, I like candy corn more than Haunt, but...
Oh, do you? Yeah?
Started candy corn. We haven't finished it
yet. Well, now, Mike, okay.
Well, most people, trust me, most people are the exact opposite, so I wouldn't be surprised if you guys were like, you're fucking crazy about that, but I don't know. I thought candy corn was like a smaller scale, fun movie, and...
Oh, I got one. You said fun is a bad one. Fun size. There you go. No. Hey, I got a question for you, though, Mike, because on Fresh Cuts, you guys do watch, obviously, a lot of the new stuff. They do have more than ever, you know, more horror movies coming out. Even this year, with all the craziness, you know, Hulu, Shudder, everybody's dropping original content or whatever. Anything Halloween related that you've liked, disliked? Does it matter? Like, do you just like anything Halloween? Because I know you're a big Halloween guy. You know, you watch a lot of TV episodes of stuff. Like, you'll just
he embraces the season,
kind of like we are. Yeah. Is it? Would you like it being oversaturated with stuff like that? Might not necessarily be the best movies.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually one of my things. In the month of October, obviously I'm still watching just general horror movies, but I like to try to find anything new that actually takes place on or around Halloween, just yeah. Because I like the, you know, I like the holiday. There's so much you can do with the holiday other than, you know, Michael Myers killing people. Right. There's just a lot, because there's so much goes on.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, because Halloween's like one of those holidays that like everybody gets to do it, kids, adults, you can, there's just a lot of different ideas that come out of the holiday itself. So I try to seek out like Halloween holiday related horror movies when you can. And usually they'll come out every year, just hopefully they're good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, and we take Halloween so seriously.
Oh, like, you take it a lot more serious.
Well, okay.
I mean, I love it, but Dan Chase literally, like, lives and breathes. Like, if he has an idea about doing something and I'm like, eh, he's like, it's fucking October!
It is. It's like, sacred. It's not only a sacred month.
I don't get any passes throughout the month of October, I'll tell you that much.
And listen, we've all had those Halloweens where we've had to work and they're just not always the best or whatever.
Especially as an adult.
Especially as an adult. So I feel like it's our responsibility to go out of our way to try and have as much fun because,
yeah.
I mean, we do this stuff year-round anyways. You know, if a Halloween movie comes out in June, like, that's not going to deter any of us.
But kind of like we said in our last podcast, The Midnight Hour,
right?
You know, when we were growing up, like, Halloween was our time, like, as, you know, the freaky kids or, I mean,
right.
Even though necessarily, like, we didn't show, like, looks-wise, like, we weren't goth or
right.
anything, like, but this was, like, our passion. This is what we live for.
Yep.
This is our time of year.
Absolutely. And you know, we talked about this briefly when we were talking about Hocus Pocus, but one of the reasons I love that movie is because they kind of think the way I do in terms of breaking up Halloween, like, mm-hmm. hour by hour. You know, you got the early day stuff where you got all the fall scenery with all the leaves and you'll even see some trick-or-treaters come, you know, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then nightfall comes, that has a different feel than, you know, obviously dusk till dark. And then obviously, you know, it comes alive and all the trick-or-treaters are out between 7, 8, 9. Then it gets a little eerie about 10, 11 o'clock. You made this point where it's always creepy when there's kids out later than
yeah.
like 10 o'clock trick-or-treating.
That like, always, like,
it always seemed dangerous.
You know, the weird thing about, like, from my era where I grew up is, you know, obviously, like, things got out of hand. Kids used to be able to trick-or-treat way late at night. We had to stop. Like, we could only go from, like, 6 to 8.
Yeah.
You
right.
know? And so anything after that, like, to 9 p.m. was a treat if people were still,
right.
you know.
Well, that's because Mike Merriman's fucking 8
but,
group was TPing houses,
but,
and I had to shut
but,
it down.
But and
so
the weird thing is, though, like, from where I'm from.
Yeah.
They,
Iowa?
Yeah, Iowa.
Here?
We always do, we call it Beggar's Night, and we do it on the 30th, and not actually on Halloween.
Mike,
did you
that,
guys trick-or-treat
yeah.
on Halloween, or All Hallows Eve?
We did it on Halloween. Like, when I first started hearing about, like, people, or just regions that did it on the 30th, I was like, what the hell are you, like,
that,
I was
no,
like, are you guys
dude,
are just making
thing.
This up, aren't you? But
no,
you
know, that's a thing. Like, as an adult, it gets so much more fun for me because, like, I've always celebrated Halloween on the 30th, and now
right.
I get to celebrate it 2 days.
Right, yeah.
So, I think I win.
Yeah, and you know what I like about Halloween, too, you know, and so many people love Christmas or whatever, but I think that a lot of us love Halloween kind of in the same way that people love Christmas at, because it's with such passion. And I also think that everybody has their own little traditions and everybody does it a little differently. You know, like, I try and do what I love doing, which is, you know, and I'll save certain movies, like the classics, like, you know, Trick or Treat, or, you know, we usually throw on like H2O or whatever. There's just certain movies that you like to watch on Halloween. I don't even care if it's in the background, you know. I'll just, for ambiance sake, throw on AMC, you know, just let it run. Just
well,
let
yeah, because that's nostalgic to your childhood.
It's so fun. It's so fun. And like, so...
They always only play, like, 4 or 5, though.
They always play 4.
Yeah, it's because they probably just license whatever the cheapest was.
Right. Well, do you think, though, that that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, those movies are centered around, you know, a child? So it's cut for television, and, you know, Jamie is a big part of that, and so that draws in the, you know, the younger crowd.
I think that it's the most accessible to the most age groups, if that makes sense, you know?
Oh. Yeah, I always figured they were cheaper to license than, like, the first one, obviously. And
right.
probably the second one. I mean, you know, it's hard to say now because, like you guys already mentioned, it's like we've had the same AMC playlist for Fear Fest for like at least a decade.
And I love how they're like, here's the new lineup, and it'll
Dude,
play.
I love how they advertise it every year, like Fear Fest coming in October. It's like, man, I have the whole thing DVR'd from like the year 2002.
The thing that bugs me the most about that lineup is they would only play like Scream 3 as opposed to like the other three that are much better films.
Right.
But it would always be Scream fucking 3.
Yep. Yeah, they and you know, though, you know, because I've seen movies on there, like they'll have the licensing to some good Halloween movies too, but they'll just play straight fucking trash.
Well, you know what's funny is, like, so on AMC, it'll be like, you know, the edited TV cuts, but then I'll be like, oh, if you use the AMC streaming app, then it's like all uncut stuff. So I'm like, well, why don't you just air this on AMC? And you, the reason why I'm pretty sure it's just a money and licensing issue is because, dude, TV shows that AMC has now is way more graphic than these edited versions of
movies.
So it's not a content issue anymore. That's simply, there's no reason for like a Halloween movie's gore not to be shown, because it's like, dude, you guys show The Walking Dead and Breaking Bad and all this stuff. It's like, that's way more graphic than Halloween movies.
Well, Mike, The Exorcist was on and it got me thinking about you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was edited and all the good stuff was cut out.
We just saw Scream the other day on the big screen.
For the first time, you'll hear that on
our... That was not the first time.
It was the second.
I saw it on the big screen for the first time on the first night.
Yes, me too.
16 years old.
Same. All right, let's get into this next question. All right, so Mike, what is the scariest thing that's ever happened to you? And I mean... Have you ever experienced anything paranormal? Have you...
You ever stabbed anyone, Mike?
What do you mean? Has anybody ever stabbed you?
Well, what's scary about me stabbing? So maybe scary for them.
Exactly.
You know, honestly, it's funny coming from a horror fan, but I haven't really experienced a lot of scary stuff. But what I have done in the past, like, I psych myself out. Like, when I'm... So, there's a lot of instances where... I might not necessarily get scared while I'm watching a scary movie, but say I'm driving home from the theater and then I get out of the car, it's dark, I have this long-ass walk to the front door. For some reason, you know, you hear a crack in a branch or something. And I psych myself out. And it's, like, so stupid, but it's, like, you can't help it almost. And it's just funny to me because it's, like, it doesn't necessarily happen when you're actually watching the horror movies. It's after you're thinking about things in your head. Or it'll be like, you know, you're in bed and say you wake up in the middle of the night, you want to go get some water or something, and then you're like, I don't want to walk out there. Like, I'm coming out of that door. Like, that's the kind of stuff that scares me more.
That's funny that you mentioned, like, it's always after the theater experience, because literally every time me and Dan leave a horror movie from seeing it in the theater, there's always a car, like, tailgating us, like, right on our ass, like, creepily. And we're like,
Yeah. Have you ever had the case where, like, so you go to the movie theater and it's maybe it's to like a later showing at night, and no matter where you're parked, as you're like walking to your car, there starts to be less people. And by the time you're like almost to your car, it's like you're by yourself. You're like, what the fuck? Like, how did this place get deserted out of nowhere? Shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
Stupid stuff. Like in the proper context, it sounds stupid, but in that moment, you're like, holy shit.
Right. Oh, and I also think, too, though, that, like, as horror fans, too, like, you can definitely turn that off. Like, you can snap yourself back into reality. But I also think it's fun, you know, when you watch these scenes a lot with all these characters and why they're so effective. I don't know. For me, personally, it's like, I kind of want to see if that works in real life. And it does. Like, it doesn't take much. Like, watch something like that and, yeah, like you said, like, walk through, like, a quiet parking lot, and you can definitely psych yourself up to the point where you'll scare yourself shitless. So, yeah, I absolutely think that's a
thing. And it's not so much the fact that you think a ghost is going to come chase
you. No!
It's more just the overall scenario of, like, holy shit, how did it get deserted out of nowhere? Like, there was just 100 people, like, walking with me to their cars.
Right, exactly.
Yep. Love it. All right, so, Mike, now we have implemented the thing where you have to fuck one, kill one, marry one.
Okay.
So, you decided to keep this one very much to the theme of this episode.
Yes.
So, fuck one, kill one, marry one, Linda, Annie, or Lori.
Yes.
Fuck one, kill one, marry one. Go! And why?
All right.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
No, Lori probably marry because she's smart. She's gonna probably, as long as she survives the night, right? She's probably has a long career ahead of her. She's gonna be a breadwinner of the house and have a long career. So she's probably someone you want to saddle up to. Let's see.
A breadwinner. She takes money from podcasters. That's how she makes her money in the future.
Yeah.
That's really. Like somebody I know.
As things turned out.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I guess the easy answer to fuck is Linda, because
she fucked in the movie.
Like, that's probably par for the course for that character. Like, she probably wouldn't put up much resistance.
Okay, now I know that you're gonna fucking kill Annie. So is it because
and I don't even want to kill Annie, but she's kind
of. Is it because you've seen her O face when she died?
That face is so stupid.
Oh man, I noticed that this, like, it's weird. I've seen this movie so many times, but for some reason there's like little things like that. I was like, holy shit, why did Carpenter let that go? Like.
Well,
it's just over the top ridiculous.
We'll get more into that later.
Yeah, we have a question, though.
In regards to
that. Not just for you, Mike, for us as well, because we were trying to figure it out about that scene in particular. Because every time I see that scene, it's like a new question that's posed, and then I'll answer it. And then
this is our third Halloween together,
right?
And he poses the same question every time.
It wasn't the same question, though. No, this time the question was different, though, because I perceived it differently. So we'll get to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Mike, that concludes our five finger fast questions. I don't know how fast that was. But by now, you should obviously know what we are talking about tonight. And we brought in Mike Merriman. What up, Mike?
What up?
So, when I told you that we were going to be recording this film, what was your initial thought?
I was like, well, it's a classic. What hasn't been said about it, but I don't care because it's a great movie and I'm willing to watch it and talk about it regardless, because it's Halloween, man, and it's Halloween time, so why the hell not?
Perfect timing, right? And we were dying to have you back.
Appreciate
it. So I'm going to read the synopsis of this, actually, because sometimes they are funny. I think you should actually read this in your Dr. Loomis voice.
Okay, let's
do it. Can you do that?
Yeah.
Can you do it in your Dr. Loomis voice?
He has to read it six times.
Six times!
Okay, ready?
Yes. It better be in Dr. Loomis's voice.
The year is six... Okay, hold on, ready?
Yes.
The year is 1963, the night Halloween. Police are called to 43 Lampkin Lane, only to discover that 15-year-old Judith Myers has been stabbed to death by her 6-year-old brother, Michael. After being institutionalized for 15 years under my care, Myers breaks out one night before on Halloween. No one knows nor wants to find out what will happen October 31st, 1978, besides, oh, that's me, Myers, the psychiatrist, Dr. Loomis, Dr. Sam Loomis. He knows Michael is coming back to Haddonfield, but by the time the town realizes it, it's too late for many people.
That is not what the fuck it says, did it really?
That's what it says. That synopsis is up to her.
Oh, no, I saw the top one, and you read the middle one.
On IMDb, it says 15 years after murdering his sister. So let me ask you guys right off the bat, should a synopsis for the original refer to her as his sister? Because that information technically did not come along until the second one.
Well, I think that's why Dan read the second one.
Well, wait, does it say he kills his sister Judith?
He said, after murdering his sister on Halloween night, Michael's escape. Oh, yeah.
So where did you
pull the synopsis off? Because I'm looking at IMDb, it says 15 years after murdering his sister.
Well, yeah, Judith Myers is his sister.
Right.
Well, so, yeah, but if you only watch the original, though, there is no brother-sister. Right.
Well, it didn't say Lori, it said Judith, which is his sister.
There is the connection between him and Judith, especially when they go to the grave and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Judith has always been his sister.
That sister, okay, yeah.
Well, but here's the thing that doesn't make sense. And, you know, Lacey, when you brought this up, you're like, well, no, that they're not brother and sister, so that doesn't exist in this movie. And I find that, honestly, okay, as a fan, people are like, oh, this particular thing matters. And, like, a lot of the times I don't see it mattering. But to me personally, I get caught up with the timeline things now. You know, in 2020, as I look back, and now there are, what, 3 different timelines now? Of Laurie Strode's character, and I know certain outcomes with certain storylines and all those kind of things. I don't know, it's hard to unsee those things in some of these movies, in this movie in particular. You know, it's just kind of hard to imagine.
If we're getting into it, I can start off with probably the most controversial thing I'll say about the movie, and I never really thought about it that much until I watched it this time, so it was actually like a thought that sprang up with this specific watch, and it's from the beginning, which is good because we're only at the beginning of the movie. But I'm going to say right now, in my opinion, the opening is the weakest part of the movie, because it's, to me, the whole, I didn't mind the first person POV when he's kind of like, what we're talking, what, 6-year-old Michael right now? Or whatever. How old was he? Six, seven, eight.
He was six, like Mike. Get it right.
Six. So, well, that's why I said first, and then I second guessed myself. But the whole POV start where he's outside the house, that's fine. Kind of walking in. But man, the whole sequence when he's actually like murdering Judith, and like his mask goes up to like watch his hand like stab. When that scene's done, and we get the hard cut to Loomis and the nurse driving to the hospital, I think if that would have been the opening of the movie, that would have been even better, because I think the 6-year-old Michael murdering could have been done in some exposition during that car ride. I just, when I'm watching it this time, I'm like, to me, that car ride to the hospital is so much creepier to me, as obviously you see Loomis disturbed as hell at what has to happen. The nurse is asking him questions. His answers to her about, like, this evil kid. I just think that was so much scarier. And, like, because it's really setting the tone for, like, what the hell is going on. And if I never just saw that little kid with his cheesy-ass stabbing. And the sister, come on, Judith. Like, you had enough time. You had enough time to, like, defend yourself a little bit better than that. Come on.
Right. Also, too,
it's not a bad opening. I don't want to, like it didn't ruin anything, but just this time watching, I was like, I don't know, something about the car ride to the hospital. If the movie opens, like, on the dark and stormy night of him having to go pick, if that's where the movie starts, I just think that set the tone. Like, that's such a creepy car ride right there. That add a little, couple minutes to that, add a little exposition of, I met, you know, I took over him when he was six and blah, 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 blah. And then you get to the mental hospital and, I don't know, guys, tell me I'm wrong.
Well, no, actually, a lot of the notes that I had for this have to do with, you know, the first 20 minutes of the film, which, you know, obviously I want to go back a step and then I promise I'll answer your questions and how I feel about that. But whatever happened to little kid Mikey? You know,
the actor.
Yeah. And, you know, after
he's not big on the convention circuit, is he?
No, he's not. Nobody talks about him. And I looked him up today and they were like, do you want to see what little Mikey Myers looks like? And, like, it doesn't say what he's doing, but it shows a picture of him. And they're like, he's a fox. And that was it.
Really?
Yeah, he's good looking. He's good
looking. Working at an ad agency in New York.
Mikey likes it.
Yes.
But, I mean, nobody talks about this. Like, anytime I hear a podcast, nobody talks about this kid, period.
Why do you think that is, though? That
well, this was the only film he was ever in.
Right.
Ever. So, I mean, that's probably why.
Well, I guess the real question is, why hasn't he chosen to capitalize on it like a lot of...
Like Kyle Richards?
Yeah, but she's kind of done her own thing now.
What, with the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills?
That's exactly
what she looks like, a little Beverly Hills bitch in this as well.
And that's why it's going to be so great when she comes back and she gets murdered.
so, yeah, little kid Mikey Myers. No, I mean, I feel like there are other... you know, elements of killers like, you know, Mrs. Voorhees or, you know, at first Jason, for example. Like, I mean, like that, Ari Lehman went on to go and do, like, and promote himself. I feel like Michael Myers, this little kid, had more of a...
Ari Lehman is his own biggest fan.
that is true. However, but I mean, I feel like this kid could have done it too.
I respect it. Oh, anybody could. That's what I'm saying. Anybody that's been in it. Yeah, right. Like
he actually killed somebody.
Like, when Ari, like, tells stories, like, do you really think that, like, he really remembers so much of filming those 4 days on Friday the 13th? Like,
but
you
do
know,
you see what I'm saying?
I do know. He made it banned after the Jasons. He took it and ran with it. And listen, I respect that. I also...
You do the same.
I also respect the fact that if somebody doesn't want to necessarily be in the limelight for something like that, then they don't have to, you know? But I do find it odd that you're right. It's like, so many people are, and then you look at some people who it should be, like, iconic, and they should be, like, still household names to us horror fans, but they're not. They're just, they live in obscurity. Like, they're alive, but they're not, like, on the map.
Well, and the thing is, the reason that I'm bringing up, you know, Will is his name in real life. The reason I'm bringing him up is I've literally never heard him talked about on any other podcast when discussing this film. Have you guys?
No.
I can't recall. No.
So, I mean, I think it's very odd that, I mean, he lives such in, you know, obscurity that nobody talks about him. And he is actually the first Michael.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that should be noted.
Well, if Mike had anything to do with it, he wouldn't be. He was going to be cut out of the movie. Sorry, with Loomis.
Well, yes.
So he should be happy. No, Mike, okay, listen. As a rebuttal to that, first of all, you're crazy. Second of all, that opening scene is iconic just because of the first POV. I will admit that, like, the actual killing... It always, to me, came off really cheesy.
I think that's more my issue, is the killing itself, not what led up to it. Although, if Judith and her boyfriend were having sex, that was, like, the quickest fucking sex. Because, like, he literally went upstairs, and he must have done the slowest lap around to get to the back door. Because, like, the minute he's in the house, the boyfriend is running. I was like, what the hell did they do in, like, that 2 minutes that he's already leaving? But anyways.
Yeah, he was out the door, too.
Well, the movie was originally titled The Babysitter. Yeah. So, I mean, was she babysitting Michael, or was she babysitting another little sister that we didn't see? And that's why the sequels work so well.
Right.
And I think that's why we appreciate, you know, Rob Zombie's backstory on Michael.
Well, and I like, though, okay, so the whole brother and sister aspect, though, that coincides with the motivation, and I think that's the bigger question, you know? So when we do start the movie and we're following Laurie and you see Michael pop up in the Myers house, from that point on, does he just get an attachment to her? Is it just random? Or is it hereditary? Which, honestly, I don't know. Like, I'm curious to where you guys fall on that particular issue. Personally, I think both fucking work.
Okay, we have to take out every sequel when talking about this film.
You can't! It's
we
so
have,
hard!
No, yes, no, we have to. We're talking
it's
about
fucking,
78.
It's
you
sacrilegious.
Have to, Dan, you have to, though.
It's
like, we're
written
talking about,
in the scripture.
No, we have to. We have to. The scripture.
Okay.
We literally have to take out everything that we know. All right, so let's back up a little bit. Mike, when was the first time that you seen this film? How old were you? What year?
I mean, shit, going way back.
It goes.
Well,
shit.
I mean, it's going to make a difference, though. It will.
It had to have been sometime in the late 80s. I don't know if I can pinpoint it.
So it's fair to say that you had seen or heard of the sequels prior to seeing the original, correct?
I had probably known. I am sure by the time I had seen this, it was already said of them as being brother and sister, just because of the sequels at the time and that connection had been made. So there were, you know, probably people saying, "Oh, Michael's trying to kill his sister."
And you know. Same. Well, because I mean, I was born '87, so the first Halloween film that I ever watched was 4. Mm-hmm. Dan, how about you?
It was probably 4. Yeah, it was part of the whole AMC thing.
So, yeah,
I watched it as a kid, yeah.
So, I mean, that's what we grew up knowing, and I think that's maybe why we're so, like, apt to, why are they not brother and sister in this new 2008?
Well, and furthermore, to this day, when I watch 4 and 5, I still think that they're, like, the same movie.
I feel like it's what going to
be. Here's the thing. Okay, here's the big thing, though. So, I didn't know that because of the fact that, like, yes, they mention it in 4 or 5, but 2 is that reveal. And it's not even, like, a huge reveal. They mention it, and then that's about it. It's more so the repercussion in other sequels that it's kind of echoed, and that's where it gets its lore. Because, yeah, the first, like, they never showed 2 on AMC. Never. So to hear that line, like, I had to go rent that movie and watch.
But even part two wasn't the sister stuff added to the TV cut?
Was that it?
What I thought. So because when 2 came out, because I didn't know how much we were going to be talking about the other ones, but I'm pretty sure that what happened was when 2 came out theatrically. Remember that scene in 2 where it shows, like, the girl visiting Michael in the asylum or whatever?
Yeah.
And that's how they bring in the whole sister angle?
Right.
From what I remember, there's that scene, and there's another scene where Loomis is, like, arguing with, like, the medical board about Michael, like, being transferred or whatever. Those were added to the TV cut because you know how with TV edits they have to, like, fit in a certain syndication time and all
with
that shit?
Right.
So they filmed those scenes later on, and that's when the brother-sister shit got added. Now, going back to 1, what I've always said is, okay, if you view 1, obviously through the lens of only the original, none of the others, what I say, my thing is, no, they weren't brother and sister, but Michael associated her as, like, a sister figure or almost kind of like, how can I say? Because later on in the movie, you know, he gets Judith Myers' grave, right? And then puts it on, like, the victim and shit. So, obviously, why would he even do that if there's not something about him viewing those girls kind of, like, as, like, oh, this is, like, the sister I killed when I was a kid. And because it seems like there's some type of effort going on there to, like, associate them with Judith Myers. Because why else would he fucking do that. Well, it makes
I'm
no
gonna
sense.
Get into right. I'm actually going to get into how I believe that he still has the kid mindset here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But I wanna capitalize just a little bit on the sequels just for a minute. A lot of people think that, you know, it's only 1, 2, H2O and Rez are canon. However, I believe that H2O is canon with 4 and 5 as well. Because, I mean, there's that newspaper in H2O to where she said she faked her own death in a car crash, which it says in, I think, 4 or 5, I can't remember specifically at this time because we still have to rewatch them, but she died in a car crash. So I believe it's all canon.
There was an article that they had in H2O that wrote all that in. Daniel Harris.
Yeah, I believe it's all canon.
Right. I forget how they dealt with it, but I think it was something to the extent of she changed her name again, and there you go.
Yeah, I think she had a kid. I think, right. You know, she, you know, left it all behind, and I think Daniel Harris was that kid. And I believe H2O is canon with all of these films. You cannot convince me otherwise.
Absolutely, but here's the thing. They're all fucking canon. They're all movies. It's just different timelines now. That's the only
But
difference.
I believe that H2O is the same timeline as 4 and 5.
That's always been a debate, for sure. You could easily apply it to that, or easily not, and it still works. You know?
Fair enough.
I think that with the sequels, and as these movies go on, you know, people... It's funny, people say that they want something so different, but they just want something so simple. And I think that's why when 2018, like, say what you want about it, but, like, you know, the stuff with Rory and the stuff with Michael, like, I thought all of that stuff was good. It, ironically, it's the stuff with the fucking doctor on the side and all the craziness going on. And also, too, just the whole, like, forcing of the meeting in that movie. It's complete opposite of this, of what the original is. Either, whichever way you want to fucking slice it, whether it's random or whether it's he locks onto her because that's her sister or whatever, that's his sister, like, that's fine. But, Mike, you're right. What's he staging it for in the end? It's almost like his weird way of messing with them, you know, I don't know. It's something to that extent.
Because it seems much too much effort to just be random. So correct. To me, when Jamie goes to drop that key off, and Michael's in there and sees her, he somehow associates with her. Because what is the other purpose of, like, continuing to stalk her if he's just there to kill random people, you know?
Right.
Well, he's seen her. And, I mean, you have to, like, when you're watching this for the first time, and I think that's the thing, is that we're so equipped with the sequels at this point that we have to associate the original with the sequels. That's what I'm trying to
it's hard,
separate.
It's hard for me not to. And I'll give you an example, though, of why that doesn't really matter. So when I was watching it today,
mm-hmm.
I thought about how, like, shy and mousy she is. And then you look at her in H2O by the end of that scene when she's fucking holding the axe. And I think that that's such a cool, like, character arc. Like, all these years she's been running from him and she's like, fuck you. Also, though, you look at the arc from, like, you know, the 2018 arc that she has, and that it's completely different. Like, she's an alcoholic in both versions.
Well, but, I have a theory to all of that.
Yeah,
I do.
So, but I also love that one, and I love attributing certain things that happen in the original to both of those versions. And guess what? It really doesn't matter, like, watching one or loving one and really liking another. Neither of those things takes away from the other one. And here's my main thing with Halloween. I'm just happy, as Lacey will roll her eyes, I'm just happy that we live in a world where they just pump these movies out. Like, we're still getting them, you know? And that could not easily be the case. We've seen that happen with many other franchises. Man, I would kill for another, Friday the 13th, Freddy. Like, damn, like, all these franchises that have just been stagnant. You know, we're getting new Halloween movies. That's exciting, no matter what version, no matter what take. Like, people love it, you know, and I love it. So, yeah.
And I think the point that I'm getting at, though, is the fact that we are so, you know, spoiled with these sequels.
Right.
That we can't separate the original on its own entity.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we, like, so we're looking and we're like, okay, so does this make sense with the sequel? Does that, but you have to look at it as a standalone.
Okay, can I comment on that, though?
Yeah.
I'll say this about the original Halloween, and this is why I love it, because as a horror fan, for me personally, it still fucking holds up. It's so like bare bones, like you know, like hearing the stories that how Carpenter shot it too and everything, you know, with the one shots and just the camera angles. I mean, Dean Cundey behind the camera. I still hold it to such a high regard watching all these shots and just the Halloween ambiance that they have. You look at it compared to films today. And, you know, all these TV things, like, look at, like, Halloween Town. You know, you got pumpkins on top of pumpkins on top of pumpkins. This film achieved that with just some wind, a couple of trick-or-treaters, and some fire-ass music and cinematography. And it's, like, the staple of any really good horror movie where you gotta have those basic things. And if you do, you can definitely make an effective movie. And, you know, you go back and you think, like, this really is the OG. I mean, obviously, this Black Christmas, I'm not going to have that debate. But what I'm saying is, damn, it's one of the first ones out there. And it changed the game. And I think it changed the game because it was really effective in those simple things, like the camera angles, like the plot. It's pretty simple, you know, but it's all just works perfectly, and you don't need a convoluted plot, because we've seen how many fucking slashers since, and, you know, they get stupid with them, they take different little angles or whatever, but I think personally nothing can compare to the original Halloween.
I mean,
it gives you those feels.
I mean, there's a reason why they say there's the core four, which is Leatherface, Michael, Freddy, and Jason.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there hasn't been... I mean, you can throw Ghostface into that mix as well at this point.
Right.
But
maybe,
I mean,
Billy on his little tricycle coming in.
But, I mean, like, there hasn't been, like, an iconic killer in decades.
We haven't had a new one in forever. I mean, I think the last attempt was, what, Victor Crowley?
Yeah, Hatchet, yeah.
Right?
I was just going to say that. But, yeah, I mean, I think... thing is with this film is that we are so spoiled by sequels that we're such film snobs that now, like, we have to look at little details and nuances. And
but I enjoy that, though.
But this one specifically should stand alone on itself because it was the first. Right. And there was, and John Carpenter said himself, there was no intention of, you know, having that implemented. So, like, are we reading too much or are we just diehard fans?
I think that as a culture, it's all like Marvel.
You're right. I love it.
For me personally, like,
Mike?
I just love it because I just want it to go on forever.
I mean, it's going to go on forever. They're just going to have to decide what they want to do when Jamie Lee Curtis is no longer making them.
Right.
It feels like that's kind of like their re-entry into the franchise, like, every, what, 10, 15 years. And that option's not going to be there, you know, in a little bit.
Right.
And so, that's why I was saying when 2018 was first getting announced and they were like, oh, Jamie Lee Curtis is coming back, and I'm like, well, in another 20 years or so, they're gonna have to make a decision. Either they're gonna have to figure out, okay, how do you make a good Halloween movie without the character of Laurie Strode, or you're gonna have to come up with someone really good to recast as if you reboot it again, because they're not gonna be able to go back to the Jamie Lee Curtis too much more.
Well,
I don't think we're gonna have a third reboot of her playing a totally different grown-up Laurie Strode.
I think this is her last and final call as Laurie Strode. I really do.
I think so, too.
But you also brought up Rob Zombie's remakes. That's a whole different version of the character.
Well, and yeah, they can reboot that again, too.
It's still a version of the character, though. So there's so many different ways you can do it, and this is what I liked when David Gordon Green got attached to it. He came out and he was like, hey, we're going to make 3 movies. This is going to be our little story arc. After that, like, they can take it wherever they want. Just that mindset is such a great way to go into it, because that way it can live on in different iterations. And maybe people will get sick of that. Maybe people want to see a completely different story and have little ties to the originals. You know, they were talking about bringing Paul Rudd back and they couldn't get him for the schedule. But seriously, it's like that would be mixing all different types of timelines, but they didn't care. But like, it's all about fun.
Who thinks, you know, maybe in 20 years, like, they can bring back Laurie as grandmother yet again, and she's telling the tale, and like, it could be like a different variation, and it could be like an anthology.
You could have so much fun with these movies. And
I could see Jamie Lee Curtis doing this at 80.
Absolutely. But I know what you mean, though. But when I do watch this, though, I get caught up in the ambiance of it, with the music and everything, and just kind of him stalking and stuff like that. It still holds up for me personally as a horror movie. It doesn't scare me anymore. I've seen the movie literally a million fucking times, but there's a reason for that. It's because I love it.
Right. And I kind of want to actually... all right, so we talked a little bit about Laurie.
Yes.
Jamie Lee Curtis. I kind of want to talk about Dr. Loomis.
Okay.
He is held in very high regard in the horror community.
Mm-hmm.
In this film, he's kind of a dick. Like, I mean, I love him. I love his character. He's so much fun. Like, he's so self-assured. And like,
I can't wait for episode 6, but we'll talk
about yes. that. Just to start things off, like, all right, so this doctor is very obsessed with this little child, like, that's only killed one person. He's never killed anybody else. He killed his sister.
Right.
But he got so obsessed with just this one little kid. And the thing about this movie is we don't have Michael's backstory of to why he killed her. We don't know. Like, it just plain up, he killed her.
He was a little confused after he did it.
It's like Billy Loomis. Things are a lot more...
The dad's definitely confused. Was it Michael?
Right?
like,
I don't know, Dad, do I look like a different kid? Yes, it's me.
Like, things are a lot more scary when there is no motive, right?
Right,
yep.
But Dr. Loomis is convinced that this kid is just pure evil, right?
Well, and because he said he hasn't spoken a word in, like, what, 15 years or whatever?
So that automatically makes you evil because you killed one person and you haven't spoken?
Well, no, but...
Well, I think, well, no, I think that, that's just that, that's just how he's... the obsession has been created, because I think Loomis was, like, obsessed with getting through to him somehow, and it just wasn't happening, and it just made him dig deeper into the mission of, like, I'm trying to break through the evil or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I wondered that, too. Like, was he a normal 6-year-old kid up until that night? Because I always thought about that, too.
Yeah, right. It's weird, and I think that's what people actually liked about the Rob Zombie version, is because it does dive in. However, I feel like Rob Zombie kind of went cliche with it, you know, like he had a bad upbringing, as opposed to, like, if you look at Michael's parents in this film, like you said, Dan, like, his mom looks like that's from Sherry Moon Zombie.
Yeah, she didn't look like Rob Zombie's wife at all, either. I noticed that little discrepancy. No, but here's the thing, I love the Loomis stuff, in the Rob Zombie stuff. Like, I love it, because... But it's, I don't think of that as the same as the original. They're two completely different things.
Absolutely.
I remember watching Michael eat his candy, like, in the remake, watching it on the screen, and just, like, falling in love with it, because I was like, damn. I was like, Rob Zombie don't give a fuck. He was like, clearly he's just like, no, I'm gonna do my own thing over here, and whatever. And I appreciate that, but with that said... Yeah, it completely takes on a lot of different stuff. A lot of different stuff. Like, that was complete, like, he got bullied fucking at school. He got...
He killed a kid with a branch, by his stepdad.
All these fucked up things or whatever. But the psychiatrist stuff, like, there was a lot of dialogue between Loomis and him. A lot of interaction. With these movies, I tend to find myself going back to, like, scenes that I've thought of in my head. That aren't really scenes, but that have happened between... Yeah.
I think that's why in Carpenter's Halloween... Loomis is such an important character because it's his concern and him being kind of terrified at the situation that really sets the table for the viewer of the movie to give us the gravity of the situation. Because like you guys, one of you guys mentioned, like, we don't know a ton about Michael other than the opening scene, but he's been locked away for 15 years. And that scene when they're driving to the asylum, like, it's really Loomis being undoing. Uncomfortable and, you know, giving short answers and not very happy with the situation, that's really making us be like, oh shit, so like whatever the hell they're gonna load in the back of their car, it's a big fucking deal. And and when he escapes and he's just like, God, the evil's got, it's like, oh shit, like,
no,
God,
can you say that again, Mike? Like, I just have to,
God, the evil's got.
No, and this is actually something I want to talk to you guys about, because for me, out of all of the Halloween movies, that scene in the car when he's with Marion Chambers, when she's by herself because Dr. Loomis gets out of the car, when they see the patient, she's like, should they just be roaming around? Which, that's freaky enough in itself because you see creepy. The patients.
Yeah. That would be terrifying. If this you drove up on a dark, stormy night like that and, like, mental institution patients were just out roaming around. Like,
I believe this is the scariest...
Mista!
This is the scariest scene in the entire franchise, in my opinion.
You think so?
Yes. Like, when you just see, like, his white gown go up across the windshield and on top of the car, and it goes, like... Bring! And then, like, his hand comes down, like... No, that's the scariest part in the entire fucking franchise, because... You want to know why? I think that's the only thing that could actually happen.
I love how Loomis is like, we gotta keep him locked up. Hold on, let's drive this car and make sure he's got a ride out of here.
Well, that's why, that's why she's like, well, why are you doing this? He's like, it's the law. Like, he's
right.
He doesn't want to do it, but, like, he kind of knows he has no choice, probably.
So, that's what I think is the scariest scene. So, out of the entire franchise, it doesn't have to be this film particularly... what do you guys think is the scariest? I'll go with you, Mike.
So I actually think you have a good argument that might be the scariest because of the realism, but I'd probably go with after she coat hangers his eye and for some reason assume he's dead from that, which watching it back, I'm like, man...
Well, it's just a coat hanger to the eye.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you should have known he was. Like, you should have left the house if you're not going to keep murdering him. But I think it's that sequence when she does that and she tells the kids, okay, go get help from the McKenzies. Man, at that age, if I was a kid, who the fuck are the McKenzies? I don't know my neighbors, but when they go back to the shot of her sitting there and he sits up and, like, looks and the music kicks in, like the stalking music, to me, that's like... Yeah. Yeah. Now, obviously, watching it for the 50th time, it doesn't have the same effect, but I can think back when I first saw it, it's such a perfectly filmed shot, because notice the shot of him, it's a little bit blurry on purpose, like, because it's supposed to be in the background, you're supposed to not be thinking about him, and it's really focused on her, and slashers were relatively new at this point, so we didn't have the trope of, oh, they always get up. They always get up. So it's focused on her. As a viewer, you might think, okay, this is the aftermath. Loomis is going to show up after they're screaming a lot. And then he sits up and he looks in the music and it's like, holy shit. Like, and you're, as a viewer, you're like, go, get out. But she doesn't see it. So she's just kind of slowly meandering. And you're like, holy shit. And it creates a lot of tension. It's just filmed very fucking effectively. So that's what I would probably say for me.
And, you know, I'm going to rephrase my question since you actually gave an answer specific to the film. So I'm going to ask you, Dan, what do you think is the scariest part of Halloween 1978?
when she's standing there and the mask just appears out of the darkness.
Like, in the doorway?
That is so effective. I don't know if he's... Yeah, I don't know what... if is that a closet? Is that something? But yep. You slowly just see the mask coming through the picture. Like,
I assume that's where the shape nickname came from, because the way he just appears right. like that.
Right.
Well, that's actually something that bugs me about, like, the credits, because they have, you know, Michael Myers, age 6, Michael Myers, age 23, and then they just have the shape, which they never actually say the shape in the film. Like, that's not... Like, they call him the Boogeyman. Like, why would you not name him the Boogeyman?
Right.
Like, that's just something that's always bugged me.
Right. Dan, you've seen The Professional, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
With Natalie Portman back in the day?
Yep. I don't know how well you guys remember the beginning of the movie, but at the very beginning of the movie when they're kind of showing Leon do, like, his first kill just to show us who he is, I swear to God the director must have, like, been doing an homage to Halloween, because there's a scene, that opening kill, where the dude he's contracted to kill, Leon does that same shit where he appears out of the shadows with his knife and puts it around the dude's
throat.
Yeah, if you ever watch, you know, randomly rewatch The Professional for whatever reason, just pay attention to that opening kill. It has to be Carpenter influence, because it's exactly just like you described the scene of Michael Myers, like, just appearing out of the shadow. It's the same shit, man.
Yeah, man. And they said how they did it, too. It's like, you know, with the light, like, they obviously just made it brighter and brighter or whatever. There's so many effective scenes, though, in this movie that are just kind of creepy. Like, even the classic, like, okay, you say classic. There's a lot of classic scenes in this movie. Like, that one that you just described, like, everybody knows that fucking scene. Everybody knows when he sits up and then he turns his head and looks at her. Like, classic. Same with the hedges, when he walks behind the hedges after he's just standing there, you know? And just iconic moments like that. I don't know, like, when he's
I even think the fake Bob the Ghost, that's actually him, is scary, because we know it's not Bob, but she doesn't. So I think that creates it, because, like, you know, if it's your first time watching the movie, you're probably on your couch, like, squirming around, like, it's fucking, get out of there, like, because you know.
And also, too, Mike, it's one of those things where you start to see, like, obviously, like, some insight into his mind a little bit, like, okay, so is he just fucking with him? Is it, like, a childlike thing? Is he playing with these girls? Is he just having fun? Is he getting off on scaring them? Like, is that the part that he's enjoying? There's so many aspects to it where putting on that ghost, that ghost attire, and the glasses even. Like, the glasses, dude?
Yeah, no, that's actually one of my notes, you guys.
I think he's way smarter than he lets on.
One of my questions for you guys, like, and the notes that I was writing was, is Michael Myers actually smart?
Right.
Like, does he have intelligence? Or is... you know, he's still childlike, you know, with putting on the mask and the glasses and putting the mask on, because it goes back to, you know, when he put on the clown mask when he was a kid. So is he just childlike?
It would make sense if he's in a mental institution and he ain't talking to anybody. Like, how would he, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm sure he's seen other, you know, people act and...
He learned how to drive a car last night just fine.
No. But is he just childlike?
It's hard to tell. What do you think, Mike? I don't know. I don't even know.
Either the way you could interpret the glasses on the sheet is either he's smart and thinks it would make her think it's him, or he's so dumb that he's like, oh, I bet this will make her think it's Bob. So it's like you could almost take it either way. It's one of those things you could nitpick at and, like, think, like, why would he even put the glasses over the sheet? Because I've heard that argument before, too. Like, it doesn't seem right that he would even do that. But then again, it's like, we don't know his mind, really. Even though he's an adult, where the hell's his mind? We don't have a definitive answer.
Right. And I love keeping it open like that, too. Because, like I said, too, I always thought that he is smart, you know? He's just fucking with him. Here's the thing, though. They don't show too many instances within the series where he's proven to be smarter and outsmart anyone. You know,
I feel like he was the smartest in this one.
He was smart in one instance in H2O where he pretended not to be there and he was really there, and then he threw the tables, remember? And stuff like that. But like any other aspect, it's like stab for stab, you know? Like this movie is very like hit for hit. So he takes a swing at her several times and misses for some reason. Like it's the first person he actually misses.
And that's another note I had. Stalking versus flashing.
Right.
Well,
it seems like he's playing hide and seek a lot because like there's scenes where he's already there and then he'll pop out
with them.
Yes.
He's fucking with them.
That's what I'm saying. That's my whole point where I think he's getting off on this, and you can chalk it up to childlike stuff or whatever, but you know, I'm sure over time too, those thoughts they turn into something else. And in his mind, I'm sure it turned way darker.
Well, and one thing that I did read about over the years is the fact that Michael has an obsession with, you know, sexual activity. So if you look at it in the regard of, you know, he killed Judith after she had sex.
Right.
He killed Annie when she had already stripped down and she's going to get her boyfriend that she's about to fuck. Oh, Paul. And then, obviously, Linda and Bob, mm-hmm. who had just done the nasty.
Yep.
You know? Right. And then, I mean, and then he goes after Lori just because she's there.
Now, is that where the whole virgin, you know, you survive a horror movie if you don't have sex, is that where it kind of started, you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mike?
I think I agree with that, yeah.
Okay.
I think that it definitely set the tone, and if every single movie didn't follow exactly that, it definitely kind of, you know, set the playing field for it anyways. I don't know. I always looked at it like this. The group of characters, like, they've always been, you know, and obviously doing drugs falls into that as well, drinking, all these things. I just think that they just got in this fucking way. Like, he caught them. Those were the group that he just decided to go after that night. You know what I mean? And that's why the stalking scenes are so effective.
Do you think it's because she said speed kills?
Probably. Well, that definitely didn't help matters. For sure.
Speed kills.
He's like, oh, let me check how this brake works. And I think all those scenes, though, like, I think in a lot of ways, on rewatch, if I'm being completely honest with you, you know, I don't know, a lot of movies, if it wasn't Halloween, it would bore the shit out of me. But because it's done so well, and the stalking is done in such a creepy way, like you said, it's almost like he's playing hide and seek and stuff like that, and I love scenes like that because... Here's what I love about Michael Myers as opposed to what Jason became, right? So what Jason became, while he became like, you know, zombie Jason or ghost Jason, whatever, however you want to fucking say it, that did provide him with the fucking ability to just pop up anywhere. like everybody fucking just kind of downplays that, but that's where he got that superpower.
To be fair, out of the core three, Michael's never actually died. You know, Freddy was burned, Jason drowned, Michael has been shot, but he's never actually died to our knowledge, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so.
Well, yeah, because Resurrection undid it, right? Are you talking about throughout the franchise?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I guess Resurrection kind of did a cheat. We're like, oh, it wasn't really him. But, I mean... Because H2O at least tried to do like a definitive ending where he got his head chopped off, but
which is the best ending in my opinion.
I think it was made with a purpose. Like this is because if you think back to then, it was like, okay, Jamie Lee Curtis is back. This is going to be the swan song, and they're going to have their final confrontation. So it made sense to give him a definitive death. Because what else? I mean, I guess what else would you do? He kills her, and then okay, he's going to go on killing, but whoever now.
I would actually like to talk about the moral compass of Michael Myers. A lot of people, you know, were questioning that, and it came to light in 2018 when he didn't kill the baby when he was going through that huge stalking scene, you know, that pan shot, and he didn't kill the baby. And they're like, well, obviously he doesn't kill children. Well, I mean, there have been several films with children, and he's never killed any of them.
Yeah. That's And that seems to be like a reoccurring theme in a lot of like slasher movies sometimes, that they don't necessarily might leave a kid alone if they're a certain age of youth. Because like didn't Jason like have an opportunity to kill like kids too, and he didn't?
Yeah, I think maybe it was just kind of a homage that you just, or a rule of thumb that you don't do that.
Yeah, or maybe it's because like these slashers almost have like a childlike mind that they not relate to being a kid, but it's just like they almost, you know, they're like a child's mind in an adult body. So whatever type of revenge or thing it is that they're seeking out on adults, it doesn't apply to kids, so that's why they get left alone.
Well, and I think that would make a lot of sense with my theory that Michael is still very childlike.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's very plausible.
I think we should talk about the kids that are in this film. We have Tommy Doyle and Lindsay Wallace. What did you guys think of them as characters as a whole?
I mean, Tommy Doyle is featured a little bit more, but I did find a kick out of it when Linda, you know, was it Annie? Wait, who the hell was
babysitting? It was Annie was babysitting Lindsay, and then Bob the pedo comes in when he's with Linda, and he's like, "We're gonna take off Lindsay's clothes."
I love how she could.
How
she
fucked up is that?
She couldn't get her to listen, and she's like, "Oh, you want to go watch TV with Tommy?" And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, damn. Damn, girl. Like, you want yourself some Tommy, huh?
No, I definitely blame Lindsay Wallace for Annie Brackett's death.
Yeah?
Absolutely. It is definitely Lindsay Wallace's fault. Because had she gotten in the car with him, because I don't think that Michael Myers goes after children, because I think he is childlike, and had she gotten in the car with him, or gotten in the car with her, Annie Brackett would still be alive today. Does anybody disagree with that? Or do you think he would have killed them both?
It's a good question. Like, it does. I've always thought about that. Like, were Annie, was Lori his actual target, and they just had circumstantial deaths because they happened to be like in the scenario? You know, like, was he pretty much just focused on Lori, and it could have played out where she was the only one that he ever went after, and they just happened to be like in the same area, so like it was like tough luck for them. I don't know.
What do you think, Dan?
I think it went a little bit beyond Lori. I think he found a couple girls that he, you know, that he just decided to target, and they were all friends, obviously. And he's just like, okay, this will do for tonight. Like, I think that anything else would be extra, you know. But as the sequels kind of go on, like, he goes to extreme lengths to get to Jamie, and like, you know, right. Even pretending to be what's that douche's name in Five with the leather jacket. His name's Mike, I think. Coincidentally, Mike. I don't know. I think that he just. He's like, listen, this is my first outing. He's like, this is my debut movie. He's like, I want to start small. We'll just keep it to like two or three victims. And I think that with the slasher element of this, it was effective. There weren't that many kills, but they were very effective because he was stalking them the whole movie, and it was pretty creepy, you know?
Do you think it was, like, in a sexualized nature, or do you think it was just the way the cards felt?
I've never thought of it that way, personally.
Have you thought about it now, tonight?
Now that you say that, as I'm trying to think of it, no, I still don't really attribute it to that. I look at it like Michael Myers is a killer shark. That's all I can think of.
Did you just do Busta?
I think that Michael Myers is an icon. I think there's so many versions of him. There's so much crazy shit that fucking happens to him. He gets shot in both eyes, then blown up 2 seconds later, and that's just in the next movie. This one, it's very laid back. It's very simplistic. Like, he falls, and it's not that he fell. It's the fact that he's not there when you look. Like, it's very, like, you know, under the surface stuff, like, very what you see is what you get. A lot of the other sequels, they build off of that, but then there's a lot of explosions. You got homeless guys taking him in after he's floating down the river.
So you're
there's
saying that it gets very extra as they go on.
Yes, and the reason why I love the original is because it's so simplistic. I love that about it. I love that it's not like going for the biggest kill count. I like the fact that he just happens to stalk a group
of
friends.
It's bare minimum. Perfect. And so I actually kind of want to get into one of those kills.
Okay.
Which is Annie. And we kind of touched upon it a little bit with, I think, Lindsay Waltz is to blame for her death. Fuck you, Kyle Richards. But she's actually coming back for Halloween Kills. Is the title.
That's it.
And then the next one is Halloween Ends, right?
Correct.
So, but she is coming back for that. However, I think that had Lindsay said that she was going to go with her, then because he is childlike, I don't think he would have killed a child, but he did kill a dog, so I could be wrong.
Right.
He killed Lester. Fuck you, Michael Myers.
He definitely did.
But also, we can blame Lori, because she was in the passenger side of this, and that's the only thing that would make sense for the car door being unlocked.
Okay, so that's the big question.
Yes, right?
So, Mike, when she goes back to get the keys, how does he get in initially?
Was he already in?
In the car.
I mean, that's one of those age-old questions. How the fuck did he get in there? I mean, maybe it wasn't locked to begin with. I don't know.
I told you, Mike, we're not reinventing the wheel here. We're not going to ask any questions
that's never been asked before. But we're going to try to break it down to make it make sense to us.
I'm still curious, though. Like, how do you think it truly happened? Because, like, I don't know.
I mean, that's the only explanation that I could have is that the door was locked on her side.
The
However,
passenger.
Lori, the stupid bitch, left it unlocked on her side.
Is that what you think happened, Mike?
I think Lacey's onto something there.
Like, there's no other
because there's no signs of a break-in. Like, he had to have got in with relative ease. And I, even though he knew how to drive, I don't think he knows how to jimmy a car door open. So
yeah, I mean, we literally rewinded it like 3 times just to make sure our information was accurate. Did we not, baby?
Right, right.
So absolutely. I mean, that's the only. Otherwise, he would have had to have been in the car and locked it himself.
Right.
You know, but why would he do that if he wanted to get her in the car to, you know?
If he, yeah, and also, too, what is opening that door for her imply? Does that imply that he didn't know she was coming back with the keys?
Or is this just a plain movie mishap?
I don't know. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Well, no, because if it was a mishap, then why would they bring attention to the fact
that she didn't have the keys?
Well, and then subsequently she came back and didn't have to use them without thinking. Like, that's something I would do. I'd go and, like, open my car and not realize that, like, wait a minute, like, that might have been opened by a killer in the backseat.
Well, and I think that's why that a lot of people check the backseats of their car.
That and urban legend. Thanks, Brad Dorff. And the thing is, you could look at stuff like that all day. I know for us, it's like one way or another, that's not gonna affect our rating of the movie one iota.
No.
But these things are just fun to talk about.
Her face was stupid, though.
Yeah, well, her face was definitely dumb.
Yeah, these are definitely the things that come up when you've seen it 30 times, because then you start paying attention to other little things that would have never, like, occurred to you before.
Like, how many, like, do you really have that many classes for that many books?
Man, how did she answer the teacher's question when she wasn't even paying attention? Like, man, you're hella smart.
Lori, answer the question.
And it's all about fate.
That teacher probably scared me more than Michael did, her voice.
I want to go back just a little bit before.
Lori, the boogeyman's going to get you.
Answer the question, Lori.
You guys sound like Hannibal Lecter.
Hello, Lori.
God damn it, you guys. I want to go back just a little bit prior before we get into the ending of this.
Bring it back, baby.
I have to go back to the part where her and Annie are in the car smoking pot.
Yes.
And I'm not going to bring up the sheriff thing because, I mean, I think
that's too obvious.
Because I think that's been done to death.
Right.
However, I would like to bring up the fact that, do you think Lori just did this to be cool?
Did what to be cool?
Like, because, I mean, smoke pot with Annie.
It doesn't seem
like maybe they're the best of friends. Because,
right.
I mean, I told my best friends, like, everything when I was in school. You know, like, obviously she, like, got high and, like, she let all of her secrets out. She's like, I'd rather date than train.
Well, okay, I can clear this up by one simple thing. Okay. Actually, it was you that brought this to my attention, you know, later on in the movie. But this will support this 100%.
Okay.
Lori never smoked. She only smoked to, yes, look cool in front of her. And the reason I know this is because her tolerance was at zero, because 2 hours later, when she's giggling on the phone, twirling her hair, there's no way that she's not out of her mind high still. So, yes, unequivocally so, she didn't smoke. She's a lightweight. She's that girl that, yes, she would smoke a joint and then call you 2 hours later and be like, I'm floating! Shut up, Lori.
No, even when well, here's the thing. I don't think Lori was by any means like a regular pot smoker. Like, she obviously wasn't a pothead. Probably didn't do it as much as like the quote unquote cool kids. But I think she was probably like, you know, she's obviously one of like the smarter kids. She probably has like the higher pressure on her to perform academically. So I could see the fact that she would light up once in a while just to like alleviate anxiety and pressure. But to go to Dan's point, that she's obviously not a regular smoker, even when they, after they smoke and they're driving down the street and Annie's like, oh shit, my dad, when they pull up and start like, and the sheriff starts talking to him, if you look at Lori's face, she's all fucking smiling and
right,
trying to not like give away what's going on. We're like, Annie's playing it cool. Like, Annie, you would never even know. But here's the other thing, which kind of, it's another thing I just noticed this time I didn't even really think of before, when they're like, oh, like, it's when they pull up and roll down the window, man, the sheriff must have just been cool with it, because there's no way he wouldn't have smelled like anything, and he didn't.
I don't believe that. Like, I think he just didn't care. I think he had bigger fish to fry. I mean, there's a escaped mental patient out on the loose. Like, are you gonna like brand your daughter, or are you gonna like focus in on? There's an escaped mental patient out there. Store was broken into.
He didn't know that until 5 seconds later when Loomis came up and told him.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
He didn't know that. He thought it was kids that broke in and stole the rope and the two knives and the mask.
Well, my theory on Lori is that this scene specifically was her gateway into the sequels.
Baby.
Because clearly she's a wine drinker in H2O.
So you're saying marijuana.
And then, yes, it was the gateway. This scene specifically, like, it was the gateway into everything else that has bad happened to her. Had she not smoked pot, none of these bad things would have happened to her.
I think it was watching the thing.
And what's so funny, I did not know the thing was actually a remake. When people, because like, obviously I haven't seen the thing. Like, I know that there was another film that came out several years ago. So when me and Dan were rewatching this back, I was just like, oh, is that fake? Is that, like, something he did just to, you know, put this in the movie? And he was like, oh, no, baby, that's a real fucking movie.
Right.
But I did not know that. Like, when people talk about remake, I thought they were referring to the one that just came out recently.
With, what's her name from Final Destination 3?
Winston?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I believe it was a gateway into her substance abuse issues in the future. Do you guys disagree or agree?
No, I have a feeling that somebody trying to kill her has a little something to do with wanting to down a bottle of Chardonnay. Like, it's running your whole life from a mass murderer, then you find out it's your brother. I would assume that has something to do with it, as opposed to smoking a joint with your friend.
So we're getting into the end of the film here. What do you think when Michael had his mask taken off after she stabbed him in the eye?
It's hard to say, because the fact that it was the first Halloween and it happened, like usually that's the type of thing that, like, they would make a big deal. Because I swear one of the Halloween sequels, like one of the ones with Jamie Lloyd, when it was first coming out, they're like, and this time he gets unmasked. And then it's like, but it happened in the first one. So, like,
right.
Because, yeah, it wasn't, like, in part 4 or 5 in, like, the final conversation or something, he, like, pulls off his mask or Loomis pulls it off or something.
Yep.
Something happens.
That's and absolutely
then all, yeah, and all I could think of was like, well, this his happened. Mask came off in the first one, so he was unmasked right from the jump. But I think it was pretty sick. Like, it was something I didn't expect to happen when I first saw it, just because that mask is so iconic and so scary. And I mean, he definitely has the effort to put it back on, and he there's definitely something to it, the fact that he wants to be masked when he does his killing, because it goes back to the opening scene when he puts on the little clown mask to kill his sister. So there's something with the mask, him and mask. Maybe it makes him feel like he's taking on a different identity or something. I don't know. I don't have that MD, you know?
Yeah, no, I feel like that final scene, you know, the last 20 minutes or so, has become so iconic, just, you know, with us particularly, because Scream is one of our favorite movies of all time, and Dan was talking about this earlier, that it made it even more iconic. Don't you think?
Well, I mean, literally, it's like part of Scream when they're watching it. So, yeah, so now when you watch Halloween,
she's like, whoa.
Right, exactly. Same with like Mike said earlier, drive down to the McKenzies, and like there's that whole
element.
Yeah, there's all that.
Then, yeah, I love that though.
Then the kids find out the McKenzies are killers too. Oops, don't go to the McKenzies.
like why has nobody wrote a fucking movie about the McKenzies?
nobody's wrote about
bring the McKenzies back in the next Halloween.
No, nobody's written about
it. That bitch Lori deserved it. She sent those kids to our house, and we wanted nothing to do with it.
Well, how about the guy who just let her, like, almost die outside because he
didn't open that fucking
to death?
Door?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, damn kids and their pranks. Halloween ended an hour ago.
Right, exactly. And also, too, like, one of the main things in the Halloween franchise, though, and they've done this several times now, is why they did this in the original, obviously in the beginning, and they did it in 2018. Okay, it's Michael Myers, okay? It's fucking Halloween. It's the anniversary of his fucking killings. Do not transfer this motherfucker.
On Halloween.
Hey, I got an idea. Let's fucking move him.
But do you think that, like, Michael Myers has a sense of time?
Yes, that I do know. Absolutely. He knows.
Doesn't that seem stupid, though?
Yes. It all seems fucking stupid. But, like, I don't know. Like, I think that he knows. He knows what time it is. You know why he knows it's fucking Halloween? You know how he knows? Is because he'll be getting transferred. they'll be like, oh, it's Halloween. It's time to go on a trip, Mikey.
Oh, we kind of brushed upon Bob's death, which is probably something that's already been talked about, but we kind of talked about it when we were watching it, when he, you know, stuck it in him. Do you think that would make him stay up on the cupboard?
Literally never.
What do you think, Mike?
That's not how physics work.
Oh, the stabbing up against the wall shit?
Yeah, like, do you think the knife, like, would have implemented him into the cabinet?
No, it definitely would have. I mean, that's definitely just for effect of a horror movie, because he would have definitely fallen. I don't even think he would have ever got him up in the first place, but...
I think Bob got it fucking easy. I think he was a pedo, and he should have, like, had his throat slashed.
No, that means you would have to pierce through the body, and then enough through, the cabinet.
This is the kitchen.
This is the kitchen, right. Like, I'm looking at our cabinets and, like, there's no
way. Just cheap wood.
Yeah, exactly. That thing would never last. Even if it was a wall. Like, you're
like, it doesn't matter how strong that butcher knife is.
Yeah, there's no way you're going to achieve it. But like Mike said, it's all for effect. But that's one thing that I can say as a young little Padawan, scary movie watcher, is I always call bullshit on that. I was always like, that's not how life works. That's just not a
feasible
thing. It's not feasible on any level. Yeah.
There was one thing we did skip over before we get into the very, very last question that I have, which was Rabbit in Red. When he, you know, obviously broke out, and Dr. Loomis goes and he sees the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And... he finds the rabbit in red.
Yes.
And the nightgown from the insane asylum or whatever. And he literally did not even go 2 feet to see the dead body. He just was like, fuck, Michael's out.
Well, so yes. That's one of the biggest things where, he stops at a payphone. He literally stops at a payphone and then that just happens to be the exact fucking spot that Michael stopped
and killed the garage
and kill him. Yeah, and hey, that guy's kind of famous. I mean, his overalls were, anyways, for the rest of the series.
What do you think about that scene, Mike?
Yeah, I do think it's kind of funny that, like, he's investigating the truck, sees the hospital gowns. But, you know, I'm not going to inspect the area at all, just the truck itself.
But you wouldn't go, like...
No.
You wouldn't go five steps.
It was almost like Loomis knew that the guy was dead. He saw enough. He didn't need to investigate any further. Like, he knew. He was like, yeah, that guy's dead. All right, I gotta get back.
Baby, can you please do your Dr. Loomis Lonnie impersonation?
Lonnie, get your ass away from there.
This is so good.
It's so awkward.
Do you think Lonnie will return
for
one of these films?
Do you really want me to answer that?
I already know your answer. I want to know Mike's answer.
Okay.
I mean, I would not put it past them to do it because it seems like they're kind of getting a kick out of just throwing random characters back in. Because isn't there like a rumor that Ben Tramer is going to be?
There fucking better be a Ben Tramer or I will riot. My biggest prediction for Halloween Kills would be that Judy Greer dies as well as Kyle Richards.
Oh, yeah. God willing.
Do you have any other predictions? Do you think Anthony Michael Hall will die?
I think
he'll survive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Judy Greer's character is getting killed. I think
without a doubt.
Jamie Lee Curtis or Laurie, obviously. If she dies, it's going to be in the third one, but I'm going like back and forth on whether she survives the whole damn thing. But if she does die, obviously I don't think it's going to be till the third because she's just too much of a selling point for this resurgence.
Right. Absolutely. And I would agree. She's gone in the third one. Judy Greer, I hope. I fucking
or
hope.
Or do you think they're going to try to make her take over?
No, not Judy Greer. If anything, the granddaughter would.
Well, that's what I heard. I heard Lori is taking a backseat.
Okay, that's cool.
To Halloween Hills.
I'm down with that. That's kind of how you should do it towards the end. Get Judy Greer out of there, though. Jesus Christ. Any other, like...
Just kill her. We hate her.
Yeah, there's just...
Don't kill her in real life, but, like, literally, just kill her off in the franchise.
Well, I do think that they'll give her somewhat of a badass death. I do think that Kyle Richards is going to have a brutal death.
I think it'll be good, though. Like, I'm a very big watcher of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Right.
And she could not film with them for 3 weeks because she was on set with Halloween Kills. So she literally filmed for 3 weeks with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that has to be somewhat of a big role, right?
Yeah, and I also think it's... I think that Kyle Richards and Anthony Michael Hall, I think that they're going to... I don't know. I could be completely wrong, but they're going to do like a role reversal type thing.
What do you mean?
In this one, Lori's going to basically be near death, and I'm sure Michael will have her in the grasp, and they'll come in and kind of fucking save her, you know?
And then she's almost in the hospital like for this one, and then she's going to return in the third.
Yeah, but okay, listen. The way they ended the last one, and, you know, we even saw that little teaser, which was great because it kind of insinuates that the cops and the firefighters got Michael out, which brings up so many debates. It's like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like is that the right thing? Like, in the real world, they would still have to get him out, right? Because, like, let's face it. Like, yeah, he's a killer. He's an escape killer. But, like, you can't just, like, go around killing people. And I think that's where the plot comes in. Like, the town gets the mob mentality.
Kind of like Part 5.
That's one thing about these sequels as well, where it's always seemed to play a part. You know, it's how the town reacts to it, you know, whether it's a bunch of rednecks just going out in the woods, you know, they did the same thing in Silver Bullet, you know, but that's always been an aspect to these movies is not necessarily the killer, but how that town reacts to the killer.
And, you know, that kind of brings me up to my last question that I have for this film. That segued perfectly, actually.
What do you got, Lacey Lou?
You know... In 1978, not knowing that sequels were, like, sequels weren't really a thing then, were they?
Nah, I mean, no.
So,
When did Empire come out?
I have no idea. This film specifically, this film had no resolution, in my opinion, because, you know, he shoots him 6 times.
Right.
And then he goes and looks and he's gone. There is no resolution. And at this point in time, in my belief, there were no sequels that wasn't a common thing.
Right.
So how do you guys feel about no just think about it in 1978. Put yourself in that year. How do you feel about this ending? You cannot think about the sequels.
Okay.
You can only think about this ending and this ending alone.
Mike, you take this one first.
I mean, well, I think it's kind of a non-resolution, but I do think it was filmed so he gets shot, falls off the balcony, goes and checks, he's gone. But I like the fact that after that, what they did with the fast cuts of like the stairwell, the house, the neighborhood, it was a brilliant way to
survive
say,
any fall.
He's out there. Like, he's not necessarily running back up the stairs to come kill her again, but the fool's out there, and you hear the breathing before
she's
the credits.
Just on the fool.
The fool. Yeah, I'm talking like we're having a non intellectual conversation, but I just like the kind of anxiety it creates in the movie. Like, he's out there, and I think those type of endings, to me, they're perfectly fine. I don't need like a is he dead or is he not resolution. And because of where I grew up with, I consider myself, I grew up in the sequel generation anyway. Most of the originals I was too young to have seen.
Right.
So for me, when I saw this, it seemed normal to me that the end of a slasher movie would be to create, to set up a sequel, even though it wasn't actually Carpenter's intention with this one originally.
Right.
But by the time I saw it, we were already firmly in the franchise sequel era.
Right.
Anyway, so to me, I didn't think anything different, like, as a Nightmare on Elm Street or a Friday would do to set up the next
one. But I'm
asking
you to put yourself in that position of 1978.
Yeah, well, even taking no sequels into account, I just think it adds like a kind of a more supernatural element to it, because obviously he just got shot 6 times and he's still out there and alive. But then we don't really know, because I mean, he could have got up, but he's bleeding out and he'll die. I mean, so I'll just say I don't have a problem with the way it ended. I think they frame it like he's the actual boogeyman, because when she asks and he's like, yes, I believe it was. And
well, the devil's eyes.
Yeah. And I think that just builds to the mystique. I think the thing about Michael Myers over the other slashers is pretty much every other slasher, there's a concrete backstory. We kind of know more about him. We have a good idea. With Michael Myers, at least in the earlier films, it's kind of always been about that mystique where we don't know. There's not a fleshed out explanation of why Michael Myers is what he is. And I think the ending, when he survives that, just it adds to that element of his character. So I was good with it.
What do you think, Dan?
So I think as a movie, you know, despite its flaws, despite everything that we can point out, like, hey, the car was right across the street from Loomis, how could he not see it? For all those moments, you do have a beginning with one of the most iconic POV shots. You do have an ending where, like you said, it's not necessarily the fall or the disappearing after the fall. It's that fucking, how that music comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me you ain't hyped when you hear that and that music starts playing again. We've heard it this entire movie, but like, you can just feel it as it takes you out of the movie. You can feel it as it takes you into the, you know, ending credits. Like, that to me is a film sticking the landing, you know? Like, forget
right.
everything. That ending is dope.
Like,
how they just do all of it. All of it just comes together, and you leave, and you're just like, yeah, you dance into the fucking song, and you're just getting it. You're just getting it, because that's exactly what they want. Like, create, like you said, he's out there. We're going to show you all the scenes in this house that you just saw him at, like, all these different scenes, and then we're gonna take the music, ride it out into the credits. And it was so perfectly done that I still, to this day, look at Halloween as the standard for many things, including that ending. That ending is fire.
You know, and like I've kind of had a theme with a lot of my questions tonight was, you know, can you separate it? Because we did grow up in the era where we knew the sequels existed, mm-hmm. right? And it's not fair of us, you know, in a sense, to dissect something that people experience firsthand not knowing what a sequel is.
Right.
You know? And I think the funny part of this whole thing is, as I was watching this film, and, you know, Lindsay and Tommy are watching these films on Halloween night,
yep.
and, you know, obviously they probably had, you know, traditions as well of watching certain films on Halloween night. Do you think that when they made this film, that they knew that this film would be that iconic? That it would get to the point to be the films that Lindsay and Tommy were watching. That's who we became.
No. Like, to answer, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And
Is that not a good question, though?
It is. But I think, it absolutely is. I think as horror fans, too, though, the one thing that I'm proud of about us is the fact that, like, we can recognize something like Halloween and we can enjoy it. In our own way.
Just for what it is.
Just for what it is and what it's done and everything. And also, like, if you look at what it's done, you can still separate that and just watch it as a fun slasher and still get some enjoyment out of it, you know? Because that's, in the end, the point, you know?
But the sequels.
The sequels as well. And, and you said, okay, my question is this. It's like, you asked, like, can you separate the sequels from the original? And I guess it's kind of like a compounded answer. It's yes and no. Because no, because I honestly, it's not out of a place where I'm trying to contradict certain things. It's out of a place of fun. And I've always enjoyed sequels to movies. I've always thought that, like, the way that they can continue a story through a different film and how they connect those and everything, I always thought that that was perfect. This particular movie, though, I like how it can stand on its own. It can be its own thing. It's actually more powerful as its own thing, like you said. If it just ended there, shit, if they never made another Halloween movie, you could just leave it there and say bye, you know?
Well, honestly, I had never thought about that until we had this discussion.
Yeah?
Because I'm very much into the sequels. You know, I never really thought about it as a standalone film.
Right.
If we not had this discussion, I don't think I would have ever.
Right.
But, you know, we were watching it, and you were like, well, she's adopted. Why is her dad handing her the keys to her adopted parents' house?
Didn't think that one through, did you? Yeah.
No, like, it's funny, because at that point in time, that was not the intent.
Right.
So, it's funny to look back on those nuances. Sequels were not a thing in the 1970s, were they?
No. I mean, sequels were not a thing. I mean, especially horror. I mean, you had a lot of originals. The slasher genre is really just kind of being born. I mean, I know people argue over technically what the first slasher is, but to me, I always come back to Halloween as being this is what really would lay the tracks for the modern slasher model. But I think back then, see, what you gotta remember is back then, a lot of these movies, if they're being made outside of the studio system, like, it's written, it's directed by Carpenter, so it's really what he had in mind, as opposed to, like, now a lot of things are studio-driven, and studios are always thinking about, how can I make this a franchise or a sequel? So, yes, it's 70s, totally different time. You made your movie, then you moved on to something else. I mean, Halloween was the thing, and then Carpenter was like, okay, I want to move on to doing other things. Or that idea he had where, like, every Halloween they would make a totally different movie for the holiday season. But then, box office success, money being raked in, because I think at the time Halloween was the number one grossing independent film of all time up to then. I think, wasn't it My Big Fat Greek Wedding that actually beat it?
Was it that? Yeah.
I think so. And then something recently beat that, too. But for Halloween to hold that record for so damn long, that says a lot. But, yeah, sequels, they just weren't a thing back then. I just think there was a different mindset in filmmaking. And
do you enjoy sequels, Mike? I mean, you know, we live in a world where, like we said, there's actually several different choose-your-own-adventure, Halloween-style ways you can take, paths you can choose. Do you like it how it's kind of, I don't know, oversaturated? Some would even say it's played out, you know? I don't know. I personally love it. You're just getting different iterations. Like, it doesn't take away from the original. So I look at it like no harm, no foul. But do you think that making these sequels over and over again and beating a dead horse, do you think that has any effect on your enjoyment of these movies?
See, that's an interesting question, because I think when it comes to the slasher genre specifically, I'm all for sequels. Because I think if you generally keep the same model of everything that worked in the original, obviously, you know, you have to go bigger and, or you have to attempt to go bigger and better with the sequels. I think where you run into trouble, though, is like when the writing or directing starts switching hands so much,
right,
that by the time you're in like the fourth, fifth entry, it feels so foreign to what the original was trying to be. Sometimes that'll run into trouble. But like, I think for the most part, like Friday the 13th did it right. Nightmare on Elm Street did it right with sequels.
Yep.
Halloween, I'll be honest, I really like the first three, and after that, if they all disappeared, I wouldn't care. Now, that doesn't mean I hate them all. Like, I like different sequels after that to varying degrees, but I'm not so over the moon for any of them after three that I'm like, oh, I need this to be around.
Well, Mike, are you going to be tuning in to our episode 3 of Halloween 3? It's going to be Lacey Lewis.
What do you mean?
First watch of Halloween 3.
Wow. I just bought it on Blu-ray, too.
Oh, snap. I'll bet you no matter how much you paid for it on Blu-ray, it would not even come close to the amount that Lacey Lou paid for it.
That's true. And we'll get into that on that show.
Yes, we will.
What I would like to get into to finish this show is our ratings of Halloween 1978. Mike Merriman, 1 out of 5.
5 out of 5. Like, what I... It's like... This is probably the least surprising rating on a movie, at least that I've done on your show.
And I would like to kind of, you know, address something. Like, I just recently watched Night of the Living Dead, and this is obviously Halloween is obviously.
Oh my god, I was going to say something about that at the beginning, and I totally forgot. 3 out of 5, Lacey.
Yeah. Okay, so when I rate a film, it's not based off of a technical standpoint. It's honestly about my pure enjoyment of the film. And right. Yeah, sometimes technicalities do come in about that. But however, I didn't experience certain films back when they were relevant or, you know, groundbreaking. So it doesn't affect my watch today, if that makes any sense.
Okay, what about cultural significance? Like, they did use one of the first black men as a lead in the movie, and I know you know this information.
Yeah,
you're saying though that even that for its time, for what,
and that's
what
why it got the 3 out of 5.
You're saying you factored that in regardless.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I got you.
I mean, and then the 2 deduction points.
Yeah.
It's just not on it. Like, basically, the 3 is for the significance that it contributed. I do not enjoy this film at all.
And I know what you're saying, too, because I know a lot of people that I think everybody just kind of goes with the flow when they feel like they have to rate something a 5 or whatever. And I'm like, I see what you're saying. I get where you're coming from with all your points, except for these ones. And the points that I make are always something to do with, like, the plot or something to do with the film, not necessarily the significance it had or whatever. So
right.
While those do play a part and you don't want to take away from that, the problems that you have aren't necessarily those.
Yeah, no, absolutely
yeah.
Not. Like, I just didn't enjoy the film as a whole. If you read my review, I said it's a classic. It's just not something I enjoy.
You should watch. I'm kind of interested to see what you would think about Dawn and Day.
Well, Dawn of the Dead is my favorite zombie film, the remake.
Well, yeah, I'm not talking about that. You've seen 78 or no? Dawn 78?
No.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm interested to see just because as Romero's like career in making zombie movies progresses, to see like what you think of those ones, just out of my own curiosity.
I think that's a fun part about me, though, is because I don't enjoy these films, I think it's interesting for people to see what I actually think when I do watch them.
And also, too, you gotta remember this, that a lot of people look at things like they won't even fuck with it. You know what I mean? You're going out of your comfort zone, admittedly so, and you're saying, hey, right out the gate, I don't like zombie movies. I'm still gonna watch this, and I'm not gonna hate it, you know, unjustifiably so or anything, but I'm still going to put myself out there and give it a shot and see, you know, what it has to add.
I did.
Regardless of how you feel of any particular horror subgenre, like the zombie movies.
And you know, with this Halloween challenge...
Hey, Halloween!
I've done that quite a bit.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the point of the challenge, honestly. Like, a lot of people do, like, their comfort zone. Like, we can do, you know, a theme of watch every Halloween film.
Right.
Or let's do, like, Stephen King films. Like,
yep.
I mean, you can do comfort films. Like, you know, like, things that you know that you're gonna at least appreciate in some form.
Right.
However, JP's challenge does push you out of your realm.
Oh, please. Fuck JP.
Well, I mean, his challenge is hard. It is. His challenge is hard.
What is JP's challenge that you speak of?
The 22 shots of JP challenge. You have to actually do, like, he has like a list of different genres.
Is he gonna go
different,
on Facebook
different themes?
And dump
yeah,
some water on himself.
Is part of the challenge too that it has to be a first time watch or just a theme?
Only six of them have to be a first-time watch. Six of them have to be from different countries. Six of them have to be from a different decade. And then six of them have to be a first-time watch.
And this is all devised by JP.
And the last... So I'm like 14 movies in, and I have one last of the criteria because I've completed every other... But I still have to watch the other genres that I will enjoy after.
Okay.
Because I had to pick specific films just to fit his 6x6.
Right.
And so I have one last country that we're doing, which will be Train to Busan. Is it Busan? Busan?
Busan.
Busan. Wow, I was way off.
You were right. You just put an R in there, but... I think the Peninsula, the sequel, comes out too. Because I've been waiting.
Well, didn't you see that?
No. Nah, so what happened was it opened, but the theaters here were closed, so didn't get to see it. But the VOD release is coming up soon because I have the first one on Blu-ray, and I was gonna watch it like right before I went to the theater, and then theaters closed, so I've been holding on to the original to rewatch it right when that VOD release comes out, so I can kind of do it back-to-back, because we'll definitely do the sequel on Fresh Cuts.
Okay, so I give Halloween 5 out of 5. Mike Merriman, you are on quite a few prominent podcasts, so what do you have coming up?
No More Room in Hell, the main show. We record a new episode this Sunday, actually. Derek's picks are coming up. It's Tokyo Zombie and a movie called Executive Panda, which gives me no clue as to what the hell it's about, unless it's literally like a panda CEO that murders people. I don't know. I'm kind of excited.
I
just
see a panda like fixing his tie. That's all I can.
Well, it makes me think of like, hey, if you remember that video game Tekken, Tekken, that fucking panda could be a fighter.
Right, right. Exactly.
It is 2020.
I picture Will Smith in that movie where he's trying to get a job. And
I thought you were about to say Will Carnell.
That too. Nah, man, I love the podcast.
Have you been on Bad Blood, Mike?
I haven't, but I know we're trying to work it out because I'm in the chat. And one time he asked me, like, literally the day of it. He's like, are you hopping on with us? I was like, oh, okay,
that's
when?
That's what he
like,
does.
Tonight. I'm like, tonight, man.
He's like, you're not on. Like, on what? The podcast. We started 10 minutes ago. What the fuck are you talking about?
I love that you're doing, like, the fringe accent. We love Will. We really do.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, thank you for listening. Mike, thank you for coming on once again. Obviously, you were here at the conception of Cut to the Chase, so it only makes sense that you're here for the first Halloween, the OG. Lacey Lou, we got Halloween 2 with Phil Perrin coming up. Are you excited about that one, baby?
Well, we don't got bad blood.
You're absolutely right about that. And thank you everyone for listening. Obviously this was a little sneak attack, so look forward to these shows from now until the end of October, until Halloween Day. So from here and everybody here at Cut to the Chase,
peace out.
A-Town down.
Motherfucker. One night, two night.
All our times have come. Fear, but now they're gone. The seasons don't fear the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain.
Thousand men away.